welcome to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator, Philip Bell, and hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's program, community associations have an interest in the safety and integrity of their communities. But as technologies change, so must the association. An example would be electric vehicle charging stations or the use of consumer reports or even Facebook in determining approval for sale and leases to individuals. But is your association in compliance? Today, we are reviewing the complexities of community association law. It is important to those who are living in the community that renters or other occupants have the financial capacity to meet their financial obligations, but also concerns of potential purchasers or tenants that have criminal backgrounds, if any. Today, from the law firm Siegfried Rivera, we have attorney Elizabeth Bowen, who concentrates her practice in condominium and community association law. But first, I'd like to welcome and introduce the legal panels for today. Gary Singer, good afternoon.
I bet you'd like to welcome us, Phil. Hey, how you doing, Phil?
Not a problem. I'm assuming your article in the Sun Sentinel and I guess 400 other newspapers, this must be a top question you get regarding association law.
You can never run out of association questions. It's definitely right. One of my top two, I would say that and property animals and animals are the two biggest questions. So I get much more hate mail when I do an animal article than condo articles. Those I just get emails saying I'm wrong, but when I do animal articles, people hate me. So, yeah, a lot of questions on condo. Well, just because they know me.
I also want to introduce my attorney, my accountant, my friend, and I can't endorse you even more than that. Eric,
I wish you would stop. It's nice to see you here, and I myself do not like to be in associations.
Who'd want to have you as a member?
That's true. I don't want to belong to any club that would have me.
But
as
in all seriousness, the thing I chose you as an attorney for me is that you return calls even on the weekends, and this was before we became friends.
He was the only one that would take you pro bono.
That's true. Hey,
I felt sorry for him actually.
He still does. As well. Well, good afternoon, Eric.
Thank you.
I want to remind our listeners that we now podcast on major podcast sites, just as Google Legal News and Review podcast, add the word Apple, we come right up. And on Tuesdays, and Eric was just waving to the Facebook crowd, because we do Facebook Live. You can see it Thursdays, most Thursdays at 5:30 p.m., but also you can see past productions. Just Google Facebook Legal News and Review. And you'll see the productions, and you'll see that we're recording today at Kelly Ustall Building in their very own mock courtroom. Talk about resources. They built a $10 million building dedicated to justice. If you've been severely injured from the negligence of someone else, just go to Justice for All. That's justiceforall.com. And I forgot to welcome our listeners. Got to take a breath on this to get it all out. We have listeners on 96.9 FM, 103.9 FM, 740 AM. That's WSBR. And national listeners on iHeart, TuneIn, iRadio Now apps. Good afternoon and welcome. And thank you for joining today's discussion. Keep those emails coming as well. Elizabeth Bowen from Siegfried Rivera, welcome to Legal News and Review.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Elizabeth, in condo associations, they may have a community garage. Does the association have to have charging stations for electric vehicles? And then also I want to talk to you about background checks for tenants and even buyers.
Okay. Well, we'll start with the electric vehicles. That is obviously a new and upcoming technology, the more prevalent they become. And it's great, except you have to plug them in. So if you're in a community association, there are the garage is a portion of the condominium called a common element. That means everyone owns a share of all of the common elements.
Assigned parking, sure.
Exactly. So the legislature passed a statute, I think it was last year, that states that you cannot prohibit someone from installing a charging station for their electric vehicle in the common area parking garage. The challenge to that is the one, the expense, and two, the modification of the common elements. So if you you have an assigned parking space on the third floor, and you have the power coming into the building on an opposite wall, then that technology is going to have to come, the electricity is going to have to come into the building and then over across and down to whatever parking space.
That's just going to make things look ugly.
It is. It's a very challenging proposition.
And dangerous, too, when you have the
cord. Your reliance on petrocarbons makes things ugly.
Says the electric car man. but so the kinks, as in many pieces of legislation, the concept is that they're promoting and supporting the green movement, right? We're trying to move away from fossil fuels, and it's in the best interest of the world to have electric cars, so we can't prohibit it. But they're a little shy on the details of exactly how it's going to happen. So it is a continually emerging process to be able to install them. But by the same token, many of the developers are now just installing charging a bank of charging stations in their garages for residents who have electric vehicles. Again, the power for the vehicle would be on a separate meter, but it is becoming more common in common areas.
So without precursor, let's talk about your favorite subject, emotional support animals. I'm just guessing. I say I got it right. So how's that working out in condos?
Well, this year we were hoping for a little guidance from Tallahassee on the curbing the occurrence of, shall we say,
the abuse of?
Yeah, that's a
kind way to put it. Is this anything that Tallahassee can even weigh in on? It's all mostly based on federal law.
Well, the fair housing.
The FHA law.
Yeah,
sure.
Right. Exactly. Fair housing is predominantly the overriding law on that, and the danger here obviously is you don't want to prohibit someone who actually needs an emotional support animal from having them. Mm-hmm. So we put a law in place and didn't really figure out the kinks, but getting a certification for an emotional support animal is very easy.
Yeah, the interesting part to me is that it's FHA is not a new law, but this apparently is a new problem. So how'd that happen?
Well, the expansion, the portion of the law which prohibits discrimination against handicapped individuals has essentially expanded to include an emotional handicap. So when you think about a handicapped individual, they may be mobility disabled, where they would need a wheelchair or some other equipment. So essentially, the emotional support animal who would be helpful for an emotional disability,
a therapeutic purpose,
exactly,
or something
like
psychological or emotional disability,
exactly, PTSD in those circumstances,
agoraphobia, depression,
right, anxiety, a lot of anxiety.
Pets,
animals are great.
Cats are great.
Yeah, but in our building, we prohibit pit bulls. You're not allowed to have pit bulls. But the person who bought a place had a pit bull, and what he did was he went to his doctor and he got a load, emotional support.
Right, exactly.
Well, it's got to be bona fide, right?
I mean, it's actually a sweet dog.
Dial an internet.
Right, it's got to be a legitimate cause, and I get it.
Yeah.
Right? But it seems like it's above and beyond lately.
Yeah, and the difficulty is that you can now get on the internet and get a certification that you need an emotional support animal, essentially without having specific treatment from the prescribing healthcare professional. Emotional support animals don't have to be specifically prescribed by your, treating physician or your psychologist who is local. You can get a prescription from a healthcare provider, and it doesn't have to be a licensed.
So you can download something off the internet.
Essentially,
for $20
essentially,
or
you
like
can.
That.
And the danger for this,
well, that's not valid under the law. I mean, a downloadable on the internet is not valid under the law. That
I guess if
call
it's contested, you'll find out. But how do you?
That's
where the problem comes.
Yeah,
right.
Many of the services are, well, shall I say, backed by someone who is actually a psychologist or treating, healthcare person who will, have an interview with you or have some sort of a conversation with you where they decide that you indeed do need an emotional support animal and poof, there you have the you know, signed letter from them.
I imagine it wouldn't be up to a condo board to override the what a doctor decides for their patient.
Well, no. When you get into challenges, when you're, as you said, in the circumstance where your friend with the pit bull has now an emotional support need for the pit bull, and you have, you know, condominium boards who have prohibition against pets in the building, and they're looking at that, and they just have a tough time buying the legitimacy of that claim.
But it's okay for a condo to have a prohibition against pets because
pets, yes.
Emotional support animals aren't.
That is correct. That is correct. Once the animal is determined to be an emotional support animal, you think of them in the best way, like a
prescription
wheelchair.
Drugs, so a wheelchair.
Wheelchair,
like that.
Exactly.
Similar, right?
It can go wherever a person who needs a wheelchair would need a wheelchair to go.
And then you have to determine the best interests of the community after that. As a deciding factor.
It's not an absolute, is it? I mean, if you don't have to make accommodations to the point where it ruins the community.
If the pet becomes a nuisance on the property,
say pees in the elevator.
Yeah, that's
all the time.
That's kind of a nuisance.
That's a nuisance. It's dangerous.
And you can seek to have them removed if they create a nuisance on the property.
Gotcha. You know, I don't want to put you on the spot, so I'm not going to ask you. But interestingly, we had a column because it's little known that if someone with an emotional support animal is visiting someone in a condo who doesn't have one, you can't stop them.
Well,
that's the law.
It's the ADA law, right?
No, that's not the ADA. It's the fair housing law. The real problem with this is actually people get very confused between ADA, which isn't about housing,
correct,
and FHA laws, which are about housing. And they really mix the two up. Oh, I can bring my emotional support animal to the supermarket. No, you can't.
Well, a very good common question I have for you. And being a former president of an association, I was threatened to be sued many times.
Oh, boy.
And what they threw at me was...
You don't need to be president of an association for that, Phil.
That's true. Selective enforcement. Selective enforcement.
Favorite phrase.
Yeah.
Favorite phrase.
What is considered selective enforcement?
Good question.
Yeah. Selective enforcement is, enforcing a rule of the association against one person or a group of people and not enforcing it against other folks. There are, in some instances, it could be something like the manner in which the place is decorated, less so in condos where it's a building, but say it's a homeowner's association.
Right.
You're allowing...
I put a pink house up.
Yes. You painted the house the wrong color and they didn't do anything about it. And then your neighbor painted his house the wrong color and they fined them or sued them to make them change the color. That's selective enforcement is choosing who against whom the rules are enforced.
And can you sue the association if you live in that association?
You can. There are a number of different forums. One is filing suit. Another is arbitration. You can file an arbitration action to have the rules enforced. And prevailing party attorney's fees apply when you sue your own attorney. Own.
Never sue your own
attorney. Bite my tongue. Sorry about that.
Bite your tongue.
You're not allowed to sue your own attorney.
No.
You're
your
own association.
Your own association. Your own association. Prevailing party attorney's fees apply.
And is this according to Florida Statute 718?
718, the Florida Condominium Act, governs all aspects of the operations of condominiums in the state of Florida.
Can the association keep records that are not accessible to the homeowners?
Yes, they can. The Florida Statute 718, as we were just discussing, has a long list of official records that must be kept by the association. 718.111.12 is the subsection, if you have a hankering to look them up.
I actually memorized them by song, if anyone wants to hear it. No, I'm just kidding.
I so wanted to hear that.
Maybe after the show.
Excluded from disclosure... from the official records, if for some reason the association has them in their possession, are things like social security numbers or information that is acquired for the approval of a lease, and all that background information that may be on an application is also prohibited from disclosure.
That's what I want to ask you about, is when the condo board declines my tenant. From
that's just because they don't like you.
It's pretty much probably
selective
why.
Enforcement.
It's pretty. I think it's part of the selective enforcement part, but somehow they don't. There's got to be a reason why. Did it have to be legitimate? I mean, there has to be a reason. other than the fact that you don't
this
like you, it.
Just your
right?
tenant. That's
they're, just tenant, right?
They're trying to get
does there
that.
Have to be a reason? I know there can't be a bad reason.
There has to be a reason, and in fact, you have to tell them in writing in Dade and Broward pursuant to ordinance. If they
you can't tell them you just didn't like their face?
That I'm not sure it's going to fly. I don't think you're going to get away with that.
Well, but you can't have a discriminatory reason, but correct. What if he's got
but
a bad
but
gut?
But if you're ugly, you can just say you're ugly.
Yeah.
It applies to
sorry,
most things in life.
It doesn't make your
I never deal with it personally, but I've heard it applies to
well, in Florida, it is legal to smoke marijuana for medical reasons. Soon, I'm sure recreational will be here.
To smoke marijuana?
Yes.
Really?
To smoke marijuana.
Not so much.
But a few condo owners are now expressing concerns that marijuana smoke drifts into their unit from neighbor units. Some concerns actually relate to potential health risks, such as secondhand smoke. Mm-hmm. What can they do? What could association do, or its members, to prohibit smoking on premise like that?
Well, the association has the ability to use the Clean Air Act to prohibit smoking on the common elements because it is what is termed an enclosed workspace. Because you have staff on the property, you have custodial right. staff or whatever, so you can keep people from smoking on the common elements. Once you get inside the dwelling, though, you're you know subject to the law that allows them to smoke medical marijuana. That is, unless it becomes a nuisance. So if you have somebody that's running a chimney in their unit 24/7, and the smoke is seeping under the door and sinking into the walls and seeping into other people's units, that becomes, again, we're using the nuisance term.
Everything my neighbor does is a nuisance.
It's a nuisance
that's
the capital.
They put nuisance yeah. in it just for you? Is that right?
Yeah. I think it's a nuisance you live on the ocean.
Now, the cool part about marijuana laws or things that affect that marijuana is going to change is it really doesn't change much anything because we have all these laws in place that already control similar things. Mm-hmm. So nuisance is what you do for cigarette smoke.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
I want to talk about your second favorite subject, uh-oh. Security cameras.
Oh, boy.
So can someone who lives in a condo or an HOA, because we haven't really talked about them too much, yeah. a homeowner's association, can they install security cameras? And if they can, what are the limitations?
They can install security cameras. Most modifications to either a condominium or an HOA require approval of the architectural control board is, mm-hmm. is the way it's phrased frequently. Sometimes it's just the board of the association. So the installation would have to be approved by the governing body. Also, there is no expectation of privacy on the common elements or in the common areas of the condominium. So it's not inappropriate for those areas to be monitored in a video sense. Audio is a different thing because you have to have permission to record an audio.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But
didn't think of that.
Yeah,
that's
but
true.
But for video, given you have the permission of the governing body, it's okay.
Well, interesting. So even if it's pointing into the hallway, you can have it.
In the hallway, as long as it's not pointing to the neighbor's door.
Gotcha.
Right? You can't have it shoot from your door across the hall, and when your neighbor opens the door, you can see into their unit because they have an expectation of privacy in their unit.
That's the reason but why I wanted the security camera.
But if it, well, that's a different kind of camera, not security. If it doesn't, like the one you keep on your tip of your shoe. If it doesn't... So if it doesn't change the elevation or the look of the front of the unit, the house, the hallway, let's say it's behind a window and it's mm-hmm. not visible, mm-hmm. then you wouldn't need architectural approval. It's only if it changes the look.
Well, the...
That's a question mark.
Yeah, yeah. The, for the installation to be on the, I guess, on the exterior is more
gotcha.
More what I was saying.
Gotcha, okay. Yeah.
During the foreclosure craze from 2007 to actually 2015...
It was a fad.
Craze.
It was a big fad.
It was very sad.
Everyone was doing it, Phil.
Yeah, that's true. But when a condo association forecloses on a condo for non-payment of their monthly fees, mm-hmm. dues, as well, can the condo association then take that property as revenue generating and actually lease it out?
They can. It's a once the as you said, the condominium has a lien on the units for payment of their common assessments,
right.
and if they foreclose that lien, they take the unit to sale. So there is the association actually receives a credit at the time of sale for the amount of their judgment. So say, you know, John Doe doesn't pay his maintenance and he runs up a $20,000 maintenance bill with the association. The association sells a unit. The association goes to sale with a credit for that $20,000 against that unit. So they don't actually have to come out of pocket for things other than like dock stamps, which are typically not terribly significant. So there are some costs involved, but yes, they can buy the unit at sale. We did have during the craze a number of our associations did pursue that, foreclosed on units and rented the units after the foreclosure. You know, typically that comes with a little challenge. You're going to have to improve the inside of the unit. You're going to have to clean the carpeting or do whatever needs to be done to make it
a
rentable and be a landlord, which in some instances can be
a little bit challenging. There's not many associations that do that for more than a year or so, I imagine.
Right.
When they realize, wow, let's just sell this.
Yeah. Well, and the association's property, when they take title at their own foreclosure sale, is an encumbered title. In other words, there is typically a mortgage on that unit. So the mortgage is still there, but they hold the title to the unit, and it's encumbered title. So in most situations during the foreclosure craze, the association was foreclosing and then essentially waiting for the bank to finish. And the banks were taking forever, so they managed to restore a little revenue during that period of time.
You still seeing a lot of that?
I'm sorry?
Are you still seeing a lot? I mean, you're a practicing attorney. Are you still seeing a lot of that?
Not a lot. Improved economy, less mortgages. You know, they stopped lending for a while, so the occurrence of cash purchases is really significant. So there's not a...
What are the big challenges you're seeing now in your practice for condo associations or people living in them?
That's an interesting question.
I try.
most of the issues we have are day-to-day operational issues. You know, condominium boards are volunteers, and during a change or change in the board or new people coming on the board, they need to get the hang of managing the condominium and acting as the governing board of the condominium. So we've kind of walked away from the economic tragedy issues that we were facing before, and it's more really just by virtue of our day-to-day. Now we're working with, you know, construction contracts and managing the day-to-day operations of the association.
Now I know, or I believe a law was passed not too long ago separating the legal representation of the management company versus the board. Mm-hmm. Has that created a big change, or has that not really had a big effect?
Not really for our practice, because we didn't ever represent management companies anyway. Yeah, so it the association, when that came up, when that became an issue, we were all kind of scratching our heads about what the origin of that might have
been. There's a lot that are dual represented. There really is.
Yeah. Real quick, we only have 2 minutes left, and two things. One, is it true that board members can be charged and go to jail, even though they're a volunteer position?
Well, they can be subject to criminal. Yes, they can be subject to criminal prosecution. Yeah.
And when I was president of a
for murder, for example,
for embezzlement, cooking the books of the association.
And when I was president of the association, we didn't have to be certified. I was certifiable for being it, but in all seriousness.
Well, this is why they passed the law, Phil, because when you were president, you didn't have to be certified.
That's right. But I understand that you help. Actually, you do that as a community, free service.
Board certifications we have available on our website. We have webinars that provide board members with certification. They have to be, once you are elected to a board of a condominium, you have to be certified. You have to take a certification course or read your documents and sign an affidavit that said you did. But we always recommend taking the course. It gives you kind of the basics of running the association.
Do they have to... have your firm as the legal counsel?
No, it's not necessary. You are welcome to attend a webinar, whether or not we are your counsel. Of course, we'd love to be your counsel, but if we are not, you're welcome to attend.
It's great for you to give back, because that's time and
it's a hard job.
It's good.
So on that, if 30 seconds or less, because we're running out of time, if you had one piece of advice that you'd want to give a board, what would it be?
Talk to your attorney. I don't mean to be obvious, but
it's actually good advice because they do a lot of silly things without talking to their attorney.
Right. They jump before they act, and they act.
Like, say no, you can't have a service animal.
Right.
When they're doing an approval. Yeah. I've seen that.
Yeah. And in the day-to-day operations that we were just discussing and in the construction contracts, please, please don't sign the proposal from the from the guys who want to come in and do work on the property. Just don't sign the proposal. Call your attorney. Say, you know, could we have a little contract for this? Just make sure you get that. What you're going to do in writing, what he's going to do in writing.
Prevention.
Yes.
It's important to call your attorney. So if a board member wanted to call you, what number would they dial?
305-442-3334.
And you serve the whole South Florida.
That's way too fast.
305-442-3334.
And what are your practice areas, like geographically, the whole Tri-County? Or
yes, Tri-County. We have offices in Palm Beach County. We have an office in Broward, and we have an office, our main office, in Coral Gables.
That's a good
Your
thing.
Firm is well established.
Big firm. And yeah. Does your firm have well-established enough to have an internet website?
We do. It is amazingly called SiegfriedRivera.com.
Ah, so they're very original, very original. Yes. I want to thank you very much. It was very informative. Great firm. I've actually dealt with your firm many times. It's always been a pleasure in my practice, though I don't practice condo law in my real estate practice. It's always been a pleasure, so it's great to have you here. And I want to thank, of course,
much.
Eric and Phil, and most importantly, thank our listeners. Be safe and
be legal!
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to belegalbuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448. For legal news and review, remember, be legal.
Do you need an attorney? Call someone you can trust. The Broward County Bar Association, a not-for-profit organization, was founded in 1925 to foster courtesy, ethics, and professionalism, as well as to provide necessary legal services throughout South Florida. The Broward County Bar Association, 3,000 members strong, has attorney members that work throughout the entire state of Florida, as well as nationally and internationally. Remember, the Broward County Bar Association is a referral you can count on. Call the Broward County Bar Association at 954-764-8310 for all your legal needs. A referral you can count on. 954-764-8310 or contact online at browardbar.org. Non-lawyer spokesperson.